We're talking about college entrance exams, ACT, SAT, here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. College testing is a billion-dollar industry, and for decades now, college admission tests have had this outsized role at colleges as they choose whom to admit and whom to reject. Millions of students take the ACT or SAT each year. And in the fallout from the nationwide college admissions cheating scandal, we're taking a closer look at the role of these college entrance exams. Are you gearing up to take the SAT or ACT? Is your son or daughter starting to prep for them? Or are you preparing your child to go to a college where they don't place as much emphasis on these scores? Join in at 800-642-1234. Howard Everson is co-director of assessment in the Center for Technology and Learning at SRI International. That's a nonprofit research firm. And he designs and develops assessments to evaluate students in science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM, as it's often called. He previously directed research for the College Board and Educational Testing Service. Howard, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Happy to be here.
How did the SAT and the ACT become such an integral part of college admissions in the first place?
Well, it began largely after World War II, when there was a real expansion of college going in the United States, fueled largely by the GI Bill in the late 1940s and early 1950s. And that put a lot of pressure on colleges and universities around the country to begin selecting applicants for admission. And they needed along the way an objective measure of college readiness, for lack of a better word, that could be used to handle this swelling and growing admissions bubble in the United States. It's very difficult for colleges to assess the quality of the grades and the academic background of children from, you know, over 100,000 high schools in the United States. And so so a uniform sort of standardized measure was needed. And many of the colleges in the United States for a very, very long time used either the ACT or the SAT as part of that admissions and evaluation process for selecting candidates for admission. Many more, and today, and the growth in college admissions continues to today. We see roughly the numbers are about 2 million high school students each year take either the SAT or the ACT or both in preparation for going to college.
Howard, what are these tests designed to evaluate? I mean, what is the mission here for these tests?
Well, generally, they're meant to give the colleges and the universities information and an assessment of the verbal ability and reading comprehension skills of students coming in, as well as their general knowledge and understanding of mostly high school mathematics, generally speaking. I don't think the tests measure much more than early algebra or beginning algebra. And they're designed to give the schools that kind of background on the students, and to estimate how well, in some ways, to give some estimation of how well they'll do in their first year on campus at the university or the college.
Are they a good predictor of college performance?
They're reasonably good. They shouldn't be used alone. They're not the single best predictor, and most colleges and universities use other information, mostly high school GPAs, grade point averages, letters of recommendation, performance on advanced placement tests and the like when they make their admissions decisions. But they serve a reasonably good role in having a general measure that is applicable across, as I said, across all high schools and both public and private high schools in the country.
So a general measure, and there's more information that could really help fill in the blanks as to how a student will do in a particular situation at a particular college.
That's right. And most admissions committees in the United States, in the colleges and universities across the country, do require or collect additional information, maybe letters of recommendation from high school faculty and college counselors at the high school level, as well as students' essays, written essays, and things of that nature. They also look, I think, very broadly across the course-taking patterns of the students who are seeking admission. They do. I think they do the best they can to evaluate the rigor and academic value of the courses that they've taken at high schools. But it's important to keep in mind, in the United States, the quality of high school education varies considerably from state to state, county to county, and so it's quite a challenge to try to figure out from the thousands of applicants, maybe the hundreds or the maybe 1,500 or so that any particular school will take in a given year.
Talking with Howard Everson, who's co-director of assessment in the Center for Technology and Learning at SRI International. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Would you prefer colleges move to perhaps a portfolio-style admissions process? That is, where more of an emphasis is placed on how a student performed in school? Or do you see pitfalls there? Did you take the ACT or SAT? What do you remember? Call in at 800-642-1234. 1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Howard, what is the difference? Is it nuanced between the ACT and the SAT? Why would a student want to take one versus the other?
Yeah, the difference between the two is very subtle, and the correlation in the scores, that is the sort of the statistical and mathematical relationship between the scores, is quite high. They started out with two different philosophies back in the late 1950s or early 1960s or so, when the ACT started to grow in prominence. And the ACT was designed to be a bit closer, to measure much more closely the actual curriculum that's taught in secondary schools, as best as the ACT could represent that. And the SAT began largely as an aptitude test, so it was designed to be somewhat neutral to the college, to the high school curriculum. The philosophy being that there was no one uniform high school curriculum, and that what was needed was a broader measure of students' aptitude for higher education. And so, but they've grown similarly over the years, and I don't think the general public would actually know the difference between either the ACT or the SAT if they just saw the questions and nothing else.
Regardless of which path you take, you're going to be charged fees to take each test, and the cost can really mount. There's even a cost if you want to take the essay portion. You're looking at fees like $48 and $67. Why does it cost this kind of money to take these tests?
Well, the whole operation of administering tests to millions of students, and I think the last estimate I saw was something like 2.3 or 4 million students took either the ACT or the SAT, as I said earlier, or both. Actually, many students today take both. And there's lots of costs related to the development of the test. Both the College Board, ETS, College Board, and ACT reinvest quite a lot of money in research to maintain the quality of the tests, because the tests play such an important role in higher education. And so much of the costs go to just processing and collecting the test scores and having them scored, and then the score reports being redistributed around the country. And some portion of those fees go back for reinvestment. Both the College Board and ACT and ETS, for that matter, are all not-for-profit organizations, and so they have a legal mandate to reinvest the funds that they earn through these programs back into the improvement of the testing programs.
Let's go to Dave now, joining us from Kenosha. Hi, Dave. What's on your mind?
Hi, I heard you just bring up this portfolio idea, and I'm an elementary teacher in Illinois, but I live in Wisconsin, and I've heard the portfolio thing be spoken about from elementary level teachers to high school level teachers, and I think across the board I don't want to speak for all teachers, but I feel like a portfolio option would at least really help out students in struggling schools, especially in struggling. I know that he had brought up that high schools across the country and across the states have very, very varying rates of success and whatnot. And I feel like, especially for those students in those low-income districts with schools that are struggling, a portfolio would really, for the students that really want to go to college and are working very hard, a portfolio is more honest to what they're doing in their growth over time.
Just Howard, thank you, Dave. Howard, what are your thoughts on a portfolio-based system?
Well, in many ways, I agree with David, in that portfolios may give a broader picture of what the student's capabilities and prior achievement may be. The challenge with portfolios is to provide some uniformity or standardization of the scoring of them so that the scores can be relied upon, can be trusted, and that there would not be any real variation in the scoring from school to school.
We're talking about college admissions exams in the wake of the college admissions bribery scandal, looking at the role of the ACT and SAT. Howard Everson is our guide. He co-directs assessment research at SRI International. You can join in 800-642-1234. Are you one of these students who perform differently in schools than on tests? How has that helped or hurt you? Call in, tweet us. We'll get back to the conversation in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the ACT and SAT on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The college admissions scandal has swept up celebrities and business leaders, college athletic coaches. They're accused of paying off college officials and arranging for fake admission scores to get their children into elite universities. Here's the FBI announcing the investigation at a press conference last month.
We have charged three people who organized these scams, two SAT or ACT exam administrators, one exam proctor, one college administrator, nine coaches at elite schools, and 33 parents who paid enormous sums.
Do you think the ACT and SAT are good predictors of college readiness? Why do you think some students do better in school than on these entrance exams? Do you see a larger issue in the college admissions process? We're at 800-642-1234. Howard Everson is our guide. He co-directs assessment research at SRI International. Let's go back to the phones now with Dee joining us from Oak Creek. Hi, Dee.
Hi. I just wanted to say I graduated in 77, never took the SAT or the ACT test, went back to college as an adult in my 20s, and then later again in my 30s, and did just fine. I don't think ACT and SAT tests are good predictors of how anybody is going to do in college.
Dee, when you went back to school in your 20s and 30s, did you have to take a standardized test?
I took a college entrance test, and that was it. So I was raising a family, I was working and going to college, and you had to make the grades. And I think it's all about how bad do you want it versus how well you're going to do on a test. That's just a one-time thing. I am a teacher, and I see how kids do on those tests. If you're not committed to the test, and some aren't, how is that a good predictor on how well they're going to do after high school when they really want something? So,
well, I think
kids get tested to death.
D is bringing up several things here, Howard. One is that grit, and how, you know, perhaps how badly they want those grades, and also that she says, you know, kids are tested to death.
Yeah, I don't agree with the caller. I think that tests play a very important role in helping with the sorting and the selecting that has to go on in this what amounts to be a major enterprise. And I do agree, on the other hand, that issues like grit and determination and aspirations are all very, very important. But in terms of what the big sweep of things, if you look at it sort of from a national perspective, there has to be some ways to help the colleges and universities not only make the admissions decisions, but then ensure that the students are placed in the right curriculum and the right series of courses. And Dee even says that, you know, even when she returned to school, she did take some college entrance test. It was probably most likely a placement test, which helped the college and the college counselors help her choose the right sequence of courses and curriculum for her to study. So they have an enduring value. Standardized tests are used all over the world. They're used for entrance and placement into the military and onto many civil service exams are built around the general idea of standardized testing. So they do serve a very important purpose for talent identification and the nurturing and the investment that colleges and universities have to make in developing and nurturing the talent of our youngsters.
Well, let's talk about the college admissions bribery scandal. Yesterday, actress Lori Loughlin pled not guilty. She was among a number of parents who have paid thousands of dollars to get their kids into college. Some paid thousands of dollars to pump up their kids' ACT and SAT scores. What does this gaming of the system suggest to you about these assessments and the admissions process?
Yeah, this is a troubling series of events. One of the first things that it tells me is that placement into or acceptance into some of the elite colleges around the country is highly sought after, and it also tells us quite plainly about the uneven playing field and the role that wealth and access to resources play in this whole process. And it's troublesome in the sense that the testing programs are meant to provide a fair and honest degree of assessment of the children's backgrounds and abilities, academic abilities. And now they're being turned into some sort of contest where people rely on test prep companies and proctors and other forms of ways to sort of to get around the testing program and in many ways inflate their scores for purposes of gathering admission. It's really the competition is quite ubiquitous around the country, particularly for the elite colleges and universities, you know, the Stanfords and the Ivy League colleges and around the country. There are thousands and thousands of applicants to those schools, tens of thousands in many cases.
Do you think this is tip of the iceberg? Are there more indictments out there? Is this scandal still going to be getting bigger?
I hope not, but I do worry about the broad nature of it. We have lots of supplementary and ancillary industries around test preparation all over the country. And I'm not sure that that's the best education for young students to get. I understand the desire to improve their scores and be competitive, but I'm not really sure that's the best way to prepare for success in college.
We heard from Jan from Northeast Wisconsin Technical College, and she says an article in the Chronicle of Higher Education indicates that many colleges and universities are moving away from using the ACT and SAT because of the cost and inherent bias against applicants of color and those from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. What are your thoughts on bias?
Well, I don't believe that the tests themselves are biased. And I've studied this rather extensively in my career. The source of the differences among and between groups in the United States is largely comes from the backgrounds and the from the high schools and elementary and high schools in the counties and districts in which they live. We know that American education is not equal across the board, and a lot of it, the quality of your education in many instances is determined by where you live and the resources in the counties and cities and states in which students live. It is an uneven playing field in that respect.
Well, it sounds like you're saying this is not the problem of the assessments. We're here to assess. We can't help that kids get an unequal education across America.
Well, that's largely the message. I think the College Board and ACT do the best they can to try to help level that playing field, but we are starting with a very troublesome and unequal education system in the United States, and now with mobility across the country, where kids, you know, from California are applying to schools in the Northeast and vice versa, there's lots of movement around, and the colleges and universities have a real challenge before them to try to figure out who to select and from which schools and how to help sort the students in ways that achieve more educational equality and opportunity in the United States.
Well, thank you, Howard, for joining us.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Howard Everson is co-director of assessment in the Center for Technology and Learning at the Research Center, SRI International. That's a nonprofit research and technology firm. He designs and develops assessments to evaluate students in STEM areas, previously directed research for the College Board and Educational Testing Service. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.